It's time to get chiseled with Rob Hamadani.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chiseled. And why do we call it Chiseled? Because we're all a work in progress. I'm your host, Rob Hamadani. I'm also the author of Better Than You Think and then a newly released book, Next Level Your Life. It's co-authored with about 40 different authors. I was blessed to be able to do that. But today's not about me. It's about my guest, Bob Bodine. He's a president and CEO of Eastman & Bodine, a nationally recognized search executive, author, and an entrepreneur. Bob's helped pioneer executive search in professional sports all across the spectrum, NBA, Major League Baseball, NFL, and NHL. The Wall Street Journal named Eastman & Bodine the top recruiting firm in college sports. And Sports Illustrated named Bob the top front office matchmaker in sports, as well as, get this, everybody, the most influential man in sports you've never heard of. Love that, Bob. So Bob is also the national best-selling author of The Power of Who, which we'll get into a little bit today, and Two Chairs, which we really want to dig into. He's been invited to speak on some of the world's most recognizable, innovative brands, including Nike, AIG, Madison Square Garden, the Lakers, NBC, and so many more. Bob has spoken to tens of thousands of college students all over 40 universities across the country. He's been on many media appearances, including Today's Show, Fox Business Network, The Dave Ramsey Show, and many more. Bob and his wife, Cheryl, have been married for over 30 years, closer to 40, and they have three grown daughters. Bob, thank you for being on the show today. I'm blessed to have you. How you doing here?
Rob, so good to be with you, and I so appreciate you you're asking me to be this with you. So I'm excited for today.
Yeah, thank you so much. So, Bob, there's a lot here. I mean, I could have gone on and on with your bio. There's a lot going on here. And you've been in this business for 40 plus years now. How did all this start? And then we want to get into some of the books you've written.
So my dad started the executive search industry back in 1967. And so they hadn't really ever done it before in that back then, where that, you know, companies would come to us and ask us to find that one person, that one special person that could actually change their company, whether it's in marketing, sales, you know, operations, you name it. And so I had gotten into brand management to start and was with Carnation, which is now Nestle's. And I was the brand manager for like frozen French fries. So I'm the king of spuds. I know more about French fries than anybody else. and then after doing that a while, you know, my dad, you know, got me into search. And so I joined another guy and started our Dallas office. He was in Chicago. And so it was a business that really, to some degree, you had to be and have some consulting skill, right? And some background. So brand helped me a lot. But the good thing about Dallas was the real estate market was just breaking, unleashing. And so that was a lot of young people in it. And so it gave me a chance to do it. And I did that for like, 8-10 years, and then got my dad to move our headquarters here. We made Dallas, you know, the largest and all of that. And then I looked at my dad one day, and for people today who are looking for their dream, looking for, you know, trying to set new goals, coming out of the pandemic, so many people, you know, went sideways, and they, you know, 40 million people quit their jobs, and then things just shifted, and people are now working from home. You know, when I first said, I looked at my dad, and I said, I should do what I love plus what I'm really good at. And people have to, you know, can't just be doing something they like. You can't be successful at what you like. You got to love it. And so how would you go about that in this process? So I said, you know, and he wanted to know what I was really, where I was going. I said, when I do a search for a president of a manufacturing company, at the end of the search, I got a tour of the plant. And if I did the head of marketing for the NBA, we get All-Star Weekend. And he laughed and said, does anybody do that? And so I said, no, but I really believe I'm called to kind of go in that direction. And so, you know, amazingly, God opened a door through, you know, people we know already. And that's what was leading me, that you were given specific people to help you in your dreams and your goals. And we've been taught a ridiculous way that we should do a thing called networking, which is not working. And we'll talk more about that. But my opening search was the commissioner of baseball, where I put Bud Selig in. And I interviewed presidents of the United States and generals and, you know, George W. Bush and everybody around the world, from, from college presidents, et cetera. And it really kind of set me up to kind of do some things that God really wanted me to do. And, you know, I've just been blessed since.
That's great. So you're doing that in that placement for, I'm going to say 25 years at this time. And then you write this book, The Power of Who. Yeah. So leading up to the book, The Power of Who, did you think about it years prior, or did you have this like, you know, light bulb go off and say, you know what, I need to write a book about the power of who?
So really good question. So, I mean, there's a lot of people who are thinking at some point that they can't write a book, and they, it didn't. I was never thinking I was going to write books. I mean, that never crossed my mind. But sometimes you're doing something in a business and you're thinking a different way that you see people are struggling with. And that allowed me to really think here, because in executive search, you know, what we had to do was we had to identify, they'll hire us, and then we have to go out, find these people and make all these calls. Or the question is, you'd start with the people you know, right? The people who are closest to you. But when you want a goal, a dream, you're in trouble, you know, you're trying to find your mate, what would you do? And so what most people do is they network. And so I was understanding, I was teaching a different way of how to go about this through your friends. So we've been taught all our lives that friends and business are taboo. So I always said to people, let me get this correct. We're supposed to work and live our lives with people who are strangers. I mean, but, you know, why would you do that? And so I had a different way I was doing it. And so for years, I was filling jobs faster. I was getting more searches. I was doing something because your friends and your family were given to you specifically to help you do things you never imagined. And these people were given you specifically to help you do that. And when I showed people the route that was so much simpler, that you already know everyone you need to know, then they would just be shocked. And I would look, and I was just, we weren't 6 degrees of you know, of separation of Kevin Bacon, you know, we're one. And so my dad in 2000, I didn't really ever think my dad could die. My dad was kind of like Ronald Reagan. You know, he was just big of life person who loved and taught and couldn't have been a better dad. I was just blessed with moms, my mom and dad specifically, so I could help people today who didn't have that. Yeah. And show them a way of how they can be great moms and dads, and how they can be great friends with their friends. And so on his deathbed, my dad told me that I was going to write 5 books. And I was shocked. I laughed out loud. I said, I can't write a memo. And he said, no, you've been saying this particular thing for a while, and you've got to write it. And I had helped a little bit my dad write a book. He wrote a book called Ultimate Success, where he reevaluated success from a Christian perspective. And he gave a materialistic perspective that you could go about it. And he gave you a Christian perspective. And then he gave 6 secrets and 6 obstacles. And it's just fantastic book. And I just never thought that, because my dad was a contributing editor to the Wall Street Journal. And so as I got into it, and then as I got 3 or 4 years later, everybody kept coming up and saying, so why don't you write how it is that we should do this? And so I would have written a book called The Power of Friendship, but everyone's got 5,000 people on Facebook of their best friend. And so I taught a different thing called Your Who, the people who matter most. And if you would cultivate and nourish the people God gave you, they could open doors for you that you never thought possible. So if you and I are friends, Rob, and I asked you for help, would you help me?
Absolutely.
Why would you deny me the same joy of helping you?
Exactly. And so right.
People have a problem of asking their friends, because they've been taught their whole lives that asking friends is rude. It's like, hey, don't get involved and do things with your friends. Well, hold a second. What wouldn't I do for a friend? Yeah. Friends help you now. Acquaintances wish you well, right? Friends know the song in your heart, and they can sing it back to you when you've forgotten the words, right? So friends will do things for you that you never thought imaginable. And so friends can bypass you to the level of the person to whom the job reports, and they look, and now immediately they think a different way. And so it's initially, when I do talks now, I say to people, what if I told you the 3 things people think about when you walk in the room? If I told you those 3 things, that would be like, wow, that'd be like me giving you the test answers before the test.
Right.
Okay, so the first thing people think, whether you're trying to find a job, you're looking for a loan, you're trying to get somewhere in this process, is the first thing they think is, do I know you? So if I know that person's best friend and they're tooting my horn and saying, you got to know Bob Bodine, I'm in.
Right.
So you have an 87% chance of getting the deal if you have someone that he knows and he trusts versus 13. Now, I don't know about you, but that eliminates making cold calls, mass emails, and sending an applicant, which is, I tell people, I get 250,000 resumes a year. Dear sir, to whom it may concern, dear recruiter, that's an oxymoron, right? And so the people today who are just trying to, and just sending in jobs, instead of stopping and looking at their heart and saying, what was I created for? What do I love to do? Who are the people I love to do it with? Success is geographical. So I got to know where I'd want to do it and what city I'd like to live in. Because we should do a job we love with people we love in a place we love where our family loves and we get to do it for all the right reasons, right? But yes. Most people, they love the job, they hate the people, love the people, hate the job, love the people, love the job, hate the city. And so they're already dinging out. So do I know you is the first question. Then the answer is do you, that the person's thinking, do you understand my needs? Now listen, if you come in and start telling somebody that you don't know, that you understand their needs, they're going to be totally finding this is ridiculous. And so if you had someone who you knew who already told you a lot about that, and I had already studied a lot about you, okay, in this process, and I had found all and did all the videos about everything about who you are, because it's not about an interviewing, it's not about being interesting, it's about being interested, right? And so if I understood who you were and I'm talking about that, and as you know, my thing is, the question is, do you understand, you know, hey, do I know you? The piece here is the piece is, do I like you? Mm-hmm. And if I like you, I'm at 94% versus 6. And so I started really to understand someone's need is I got to know who the person is that I'm talking about. And I start to study that. And then I got to see if I like you. So that's really number two is, do I like you? Understand? Do I know you? Do I like you?
Thank you.
And then, hey, are you the best for me? And so the issue is that if they like you, if I'm at 94 already, which is hard for people to think, we understand already, if talent was the reason everyone got jobs, well, we wouldn't have Congress and Senate. Trouble in River City. So everyone comes into these jobs selling like they think they should do an elevator speech, right? They should get, they have this, they have to have this resume. They're not even reading it. They don't know you. So wouldn't it be logical that you know one person who knows that person? Well, you haven't even studied it. You haven't even tried. So why wouldn't you start with your who rather than what? And then, hey, are you the best? Now, all of a sudden, the person's individually, I know you, you've talked. All I need to do is say, hey, do I know you? We talk about, I talk to this, you introduce me to someone. I say, hey, so we talk about Rob and we make fun of you and we have this and we're laughing. And he immediately likes me and all of a sudden we're into it. I'm talking about things I know because I've studied about him. And then, hey, are you the best? He says, come in, let me tell you what I'm looking at. You're not going to get it if you're not qualified. But the answer is, our friends aren't introducing you when they trust you and saying, hey, if you're not really, really good, right? But to get the job in this process. So when I start to say to people about the power of who is that, so what is it that you want? God wrote that on your heart, right?
And yeah.
So he's got a plan, and this is very interesting. And so as I started to write the power of who, it really started to change the way people went about their search to anything. And so it just became so big. And when people start to realize that they're wasting so much time getting in networking groups and joining a bunch of people you don't know, and here's Bill, here's Rob, Bob, I want you to sit next to you, because you're thinking, let me get a stick in my eye or something, you know, how am I doing this? I've already successful. I've written books. I got this. And now I got to put up with now starting here. Well, you got to have a mentor, right? And you got to have some things. So in this book, in The Power of Who, I really teach people, whether you're young and you're trying to find your first job, whether you're 40 and you dumped the first 20 years of your life because you were told what to do, and now you're trying to figure out what the heck I really want to do. And then, or if you're 60 and you built a company, you sold it, you did a career, they didn't, you were outplaced for some reason, somehow you got out. So God's got a plan. And so wouldn't it be logical that our friends are going to gather around us and help us achieve that? And so this book just is now taught in 23 universities. It's got a life of its own. I mean, I have more people call me every day and they go, I got to tell you. So I went about trying to work off of my skills, and I was selling myself and doing all this. And it sounded so arrogant, even as doing it, right? I've done this and I've done that. And then wouldn't it be better if somebody else is tooting your horn? And of course, our friends, what if your friends were given to you specifically to help you find that place in life you never dreamed of? And when you start to utilize your friends, and so of course, you can't have friends if you're not going to be one. And so we have to be willing both ways to help our friends, but what wouldn't we do for them? And so all my business that I get. So when I first started, I did this funny thing, and I know you want to ask questions, but I'm going to tell you just one little more thing before you get into it. I did the study, and I worked my you-know-what off to get to 5,365 people that know me. And it took me 5 million miles on American Airlines to do it. And then I did a study of who's touched my life or given me personal business out of the 5,365. And I found 87. I said, oh my gosh, you got to be kidding me. It was like an earth-shaking thought. So I could cut back my Rolodex, focus in on the people who wanted to be with me and touch my life, and my business quadrupled. And it was so much easier.
That's an amazing thought. I got a couple questions here, and thank you for sharing all that. So the first question, it's not about so much the who, it's about the what. What I'm going to ask you is, you said some people, they know what they want, they love what they want, and then they can find that who. So there's people out there that don't like what they're doing, and they're doing it, and they might be asking for the wrong who in something they don't like. So the question would be, how does that person who's stuck in that area say to myself, how do I really find out what God's calling me to do? Do I feel it? Do I hear it? Do I sense it? What are they feeling? What are you thinking?
So, I mean, God's written everything on your heart. You already know the direction you really want. The problem is you got into a job and you were just, you know, you followed your way initially and you put in an application, you got into a job, you were promoted, and you don't even like what you're doing. 69% of the country believe that a bad day at the beach is better than a good day at work. 80% of the country aren't using their number one talent. 60% of the country now, as a result, are getting divorced. Why? Because you come home and you're constantly bothered by the fact that you hate what you do. And you were trying to be so positive all day long, but you have this trailing conversation that you only now tell the worst to your wife. And your wife finally looks and goes, change jobs. Find this. So I said, so what is it that you want? I mean, with the whole process in time, and if you go through the whole Bible and God talks to you in the Bible, one of the things that he constantly says is he'd come over to people and say, what do you want? Now, he knows what they want, but he wants them to say it. So I say to people, listen, hey, man wanted to get in the pool to get healed. He couldn't get in there. So he comes over, he's screaming out his name. Jesus doesn't stop. He keeps screaming. Those really great people who are like great Christians, they come over to him and say, don't bug him. So it's like a setback, but it's really a setup.
Uh-huh.
Because then Jesus comes over to him and says, what do you want? And he says, oh, I want to be healed. And so he says, do you believe I can do that? Yes. Stand up. And so half the times in jobs is what do you want? And so when people say to me, oh, I read your book, I love The Power of Who. And I said, great, you got it all. And yes, I said, so name to me the three specific companies that you'd like to join and the three specific people you'd report to. And they go, so I want to be in manufacturing. What the heck is that? Is that a company? Is that a specific person? No. So what they do is, I said, so who are the companies and the people you want to join if you were going to do it? And so they say, I don't know. And I said, well, how would you ask your friends for help then? So your friends can't help you. It's the Jerry Maguire. Help me help you. I'd like to help you. But all you had to do was do some homework. So for example, in search, what I do is I'm doing a search for the head of marketing for a university at the moment. So I go out, identify the schools that would be logical, that the person would be the number two person in marketing for that size school or the type of school they are. Then I go out to my friends and I say, hey, look, I've identified some, I'm doing the search. What do you think? They say, let me think about it. I'll call you back. They're not going to call you back. So I say, no, I've done some homework, which is very impressive to them. I said, could you mind, because they're in the industry, do you mind if I tell you seven names of some people? Okay, that are currently doing the job. So I review them. They know, and they say, hey, I know that person. No, I don't think that's right. No, I don't know that person. Then, that's the best name you got. Then they get to number five and they go, pretty good. And by the time they get to six or seven, you know what they start thinking? Rob, I got to get Bob off the phone. I'm banking on that. Why? Because I know that they know someone and I wanted to slow their mind down to give me the one name I didn't. I don't care if they know any of my seven. I want the one name that they know. And that's the door. If all my who, my 100 who, which I created a strategy called 140, where you identify all your friends who could possibly be in your who. And maybe you have 20, maybe you have 30, maybe you, if you're the greatest network in the world, you got 100. And then over here on the other side is what are the jobs you want? I don't want you to have the 101 strategy. So like you're nervous if you didn't get the one. So write down all the companies that are currently doing the things that you'd like. Everything's online already for the names of the people who the job reports to. And then you go back to your friends. Shocker. God gave those people to know those. And they say to them, I know the perfect person. They just did that to me on my search. I have a friend of mine. And I tell people all the time, it's not, you see your friends one-dimensionally, like, oh, well, Rob's a dentist. Rob's in this business. He's in real estate. He's over here. He does this. So Rob couldn't, as a real estate guy, know my person who I need to have as a doctor who's going to do my shoulder. How would you know? You never asked him.
Yeah.
How do you know his mom didn't just get it? He knows the one person, his brother's the greatest doctor in the world. And it does it because all my friends help me in the power who gets you jobs, doctors, dentists, lawyers, babysitters, your loans, anything. And I tell you is that you were given 12 friends, 3 close, 1 best. And these people have a crucial factor in all your aspect of your life. And they float during your life so that more people move into it. And in this book, I show you where they are in different compartments of how to actually access people to open up and make your life so much simpler. And my thing is the power who is a gift from God. He gave you these people. And yet we don't want to ask them because, hey, I'm not supposed to work with my friends. Who told you that? I mean, if you take the top 1% of the country, the Rothschilds, the Huffingtons, the Kennedys, the whatever you name them, they do something different than everybody else. What do? They use friends and family for everything.
Yeah.
They, you know what they told everyone else to do? Get in line and online. I'm not doing that. Why would I not call Joe, call Rob, call Phil, call Tom, my best friends, and say, so Rob, here's my dilemma. What do you think? And then you go, I can't believe you told me that because I have the perfect person for you. That's not a shock to me any longer as I wrote this book. And I have people who have achieved things. And so your statement of how do I get out of this job? Well, first off, what's the job you want?
Yeah.
So now we moved, which would move you to the fact that says why I wrote book number 2.
Well, and we'll get into that. But so like you're talking about why you're getting out of that job, it's people are, I think, are afraid to say what they really want. And that's what you alluded to earlier. And right. So say what's in your heart. And then when you put it out there into the so-called universe, things start happening. And so that leads me to the next question you just talked about. Let me say this first. So like I'm in a real estate business. You know my mentor, Brian Buffini, and he talks about doing business by referral, talking to the who's in your world, right? And right. So we become a resource. We become the guy that knows the doctor, knows the insurance guy, knows this person, that person. That's what we're here for. I tell people all the time in my business, don't see me as just your realtor. See me as your resource guy. And so I want to be that who.
Yeah. And you're not just that. You're what I have a whole chapter on is your personal board of directors.
Correct.
So I'm on your board because I'm not one dimensional. I'm who dimensional.
Yeah. Ooh, like all that.
People, right. That I actually have. And when I actually help you with your son getting into a college, helping your son or your daughter do this, helping your mom get into a hospital, who do you want to do business with? Well, if I'm that good on all these other things, you know, I'm really good in finding you a house, getting you into this, closing your loan, being your advisor. You're the financial advisor to my life because the most important thing is my home. And so whether that's a loan or something along the way and all this and how I would refinance, how I would do this, wouldn't this all be logical that my other person is also really, really good? And so when people in the field, we're given permission. The reason I give so many talks to Buffini and all these groups all over is I give people such as yourself permission to go and be friends with your friends and your friends. So my dad, when I first joined the business, said, I want to tell you the 3 things that Eastman and Bodine does. These 3 things will rock your world. So I'm thinking it's going to be ridiculously technical. And my dad's first one was make friends. Of course, right? Number two is help your friends in every way possible. Okay. And so three, don't be surprised if you do a lot of business with your friends. But what wouldn't I do for my friends? So I help my friends everywhere, in everything. As an executive search, I do the same thing as you. I'm going to help you research, but I'm going to help your daughter, your son. I'm going to get something. I'm going to get you. I'm going to help them in key ideas on how to interview, how to do this. But I also know doctors, lawyers, dentists. I can get people into games and into situations that you could never think of from a sports side, which creates such great moments for a father and a son and a mother and her daughter. And so the stories and we do a thing. We do a thing called Who Friday. On Friday, every Friday, our firm stops work at 12 o'clock and we just call our friends and see how we can help them. We call it Who Friday.
And yeah, I like that.
And so would you be, I just go out and help people all day long. Would you be surprised that Friday's my biggest day of business? I mean, because that's the way God works, right? The more you give, the more you get. If you want your dreams to come true, help other people make their dreams. So people would call me and then I say, hey, so how are you doing? It's Friday. Oh, I'm doing okay. Well, that doesn't sound good. Like, so what's the matter? Well, and then they tell a situation about their son who's a quadriplegic and my wife's not having enough moments with him. He's now getting to the age where she's worried he could die. I don't know what to do. And I said, so what does he like to do? Oh, Randy, he likes, he thinks of his wheelchair as a NASCAR. Oh, fantastic. And I said, do you go to races? And he goes, yeah, he and I go, and we sit in the handicap area and we do it. I said, so your wife doesn't get a chance to do that? Well, she doesn't really do that. And I go, have you ever been down to the pit? And he goes, I don't know. Can we do that with my son's, wheelchair? And I said, who's his favorite? Oh, it was during a time. It was, when you start to do is it's like the biggest racers in the world. And he starts to come out and says, hey, I'm going to do a thing with Jimmy Johnson, or I'm going to do a thing with someone else. Do you know that our contacts, you and I, know someone who knows another person who can set up an event for them and change everything? And so we have the ability to, we hold the keys to our friends and family's goals and dreams. And we just don't know what power we do through our network. It's like, remember they had that ad where all these people are behind you and the person just said it was like one of those phone ads. And then, you're not looking at me, you're looking at, I've got who? I have this community of friends that would come to my aid if I asked them. Because I've done unconditional love for them for years and years and years. And they don't know, they just want to find a time, right? That they can do that. And so my whole thing is that when I opened a door and changed the person's life by getting them down in a pit, then everything changes. And that's what I just want to remind people is that you got who? You have this community of friends. They want to do things with you. They would open up opportunities and get you where places that you can't even imagine to be able to go, but the reason we never get a chance to do it is we never like to ask. And of course, that's just a big mistake.
Well, we got to ask, but I'm going to give myself a shameless self plug here. You use the word, the moments, the power of the moments. My chapter in this book that I was a co-author with, my chapter is titled The Power of Moments. And I think the power of moments behind that power of moments is I really feel the Holy Spirit's working behind that. The Holy Spirit allows you to be aware, to see a moment when it occurs, to be in that moment when it occurs. And even before it occurs, sometimes it's like you can see something developing down the road. And I feel like it's the Holy Spirit guiding you down that road. So thank you for allowing me to give myself a shameless self-plug.
I love it. And my whole thing is that you just don't understand. It's like, When this kid said he loved Dale Earnhardt Jr., right? It was just an opportunity. And I just happened to know the agent. And I could just happen to say, hey, could we do this? And we get down in the thing and Dale Earnhardt Jr. is taking a Polaroid and saying he's going to drive with him today. They give him jackets. Some things happen because God's created such a moment like you're talking, right? Yeah. And you have, and I tell you, I have a whole chapter in my book called Moment Makers. Uh-huh. And that I think that's what you and I are called to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Bob, let's get into this one right here, because this is my favorite right here. So what segued you into the two chairs from The Power of Who?
So the issue is that I had to write The Power of Who first before I could write two chairs. So, I mean, I've been doing two chairs for 40 years, 40 plus years. And I had, when I go backwards and now, so think about this when you're looking for my, what's on my heart, what have I been called to do? What's my purpose, my assignment? You know, where's my destiny go? When I first started, I back in the day, I asked my mom and I said, so how do you find your dreams, your goals? You know, how do you find a mate? What do you do in real trouble? And she said, oh my gosh, those are really good questions. She goes, I don't have the answer, but I know who does. And so she said to me, can I ask you three questions? These three questions are simple, but they're very, you know, disruptive. And I said, sure. And she goes, okay, so you're looking for your goals and dreams and what to do in times of trouble and all this. And she goes, do you think, Bob, that God knows your situation? Now that's interesting. When you're in trouble, that kind of scares you a little bit that God does know too, right? And it's not like, hey, I'd like a goal and do you think God knows your goal? So my mom said, not only does God know your situation, but he wants you to know he knows. See, the highest priority in a crisis or any situation of things you want is to get your mind above it. And the highest thought, of course, is God. And he doesn't have six telephone lines for 7 billion people. And he doesn't just work on high ISIS, heart attack, natural disasters. He's working on you. And so she goes, okay, so I'm going to ask you a second question. I said, good. She says, is this too hard for him to help you? And I go, no. And she goes, but it's too hard for you. And see, so that's where a lot of people, where you go back to your job thing, right? He's in a job. He doesn't know. So the question is, does God know? Yes. Is it too hard for him to help you? No, but you'd have to ask him, right? And then, so then the third question is, does God have a good plan for you? These are simple questions that change your framework of your mind, because if God knows and it's not too hard and he has a plan, the question my mom said is, what is it? I have no idea. And so she goes, exactly, two chairs. So she says, what if you set up one chair for you first thing in the morning and one chair for God, and you meet him and you get to meet the creator of the world, the guy who knows everything about you. He made you. He knows every hair on your head. He knows every situation you're going to be to. And he's been wanting to have a conversation, and you're not calling the meeting. He's calling it. And he's been wanting to have this conversation to tell you he's got a plan for you, and it's good and it's prosperous. It has a future and a hope. What is it? Well, my mom said, if there's a 1% chance that the guy who created the whole world would actually meet with you, would you go? And I said, well, yeah. And she says, well, that's good. She says, because that's going to be the deciding factor. So you get 1 minute to talk with God. You get to lay down your trouble. Here's what's my issue today. Here's what it is. Thank you that you're meeting with me. It's unbelievable. And then God gets 4 minutes to talk to you. If you want 2 minutes, he gets 8. And see, the problem that we have is our whole world, wouldn't you agree, Rob, is what we've been taught, that to talk at God is to pray. So we pray at him. What'd he say? We have no idea.
Because we're too busy talking.
We're always talking. We're jabbering at a nonstop pace. And so we like have this wish list, and we take it all to him, and we do it. And then we come back, and when we're like bothered, I mean, we treat him like he's a court judge. And then, he comes in and then he's like, hey, you know, dismissed or this or that or that. And we're like, hey, hold a second. What did he say? So God said, if you would ask him, he'd tell you. He said, if you'd seek me, you're finding him. And so the guy of the whole world actually wanted to meet all along the way. And he has some specific plans, he says, for you. And if our steps are ordered, which we know God said your steps are ordered, that really bugs us when we're in a job and we're sitting in a crappy job and we're wondering, how do we get out of this job? Well, hold a second. Does God know? That's my real question right off the bat, because I can't tell you about who I'm going to give you, which is why I wrote the second piece, which was the power of who. He gave you specific people to help you. But before you do it, wouldn't you like to know what it is? I mean, you can't die, go to heaven, meet Jesus. He's low-fiving Peter and Paul like he punked you. And he's given me the dream, but he's not going to give you the dream. He's not going to do something for me. He loves you just as much as he loves me. But most people don't stop at the chair and don't take the moment. So you and I both know that 5 minutes in the presence of God changes all your best laid plans. And so the stories in this thing, when I first started to write this, God, I started and God said to me, hey, so put down your pen. Do you believe that I'm going to talk to each and every person? Yes. And he goes, I knew you were going to say that, but I wanted you to say it out loud, because there's so many people who don't feel worthy that they're going to get somebody that God can talk to them. Why? Well, I'm not really a good person. I haven't really done this right. And hey, so listen, I've been busy. I'm not really talking to God. I don't go to church. And I said, when kids say that to me all the time, when I give talks at colleges and they say, oh, Mr. Bodine, I don't go to church. And I said, so do you own shares? Sure. And I go, so if God himself would come to your apartment, okay, do you own 2 chairs? I mean, I don't care if it's like, you know, bean bags, it's 2 rocks. If God would come and meet you, would you meet him? Sure. I said, where you been? So listen, the guy who created wants to talk. And so his whole point is to have a conversation with you. And he knows your situation, just like he knew the guy at the pool wanting to get healed. But he's going to say, what do you want? And so you get to then say, here's what I want. And then he's going to talk to you. So let's just make sure that people understand. So every single day you hear the enemy talk to you all day long and you're okay with it. And that voice is good. But if I hear God one time, oh my gosh, I'm a schizophrenic. No, this is crazy. So when you call, what's your wife's name, Rob?
Debbie.
So when you call Debbie and you say, hey, hon, what are you doing? Does she say, who is this?
No.
Well, I mean, does she know your voice?
Yes, she does.
And didn't God say my sheep all know my voice?
Yes, he did.
So if God, who said that in the Bible, he said he knew you before the foundation of the world. Well, I don't know anybody. Do you know anybody that you haven't talked to? Or do you, you know, I know of Abraham Lincoln, but I don't know Abraham Lincoln. And so wouldn't it be logical that, I mean, the worst part of the Bible is that there's people who say they did all the stuff for God at the end. And then he says they can't get into heaven. And he said, why? And he says, well, I don't know you.
Yeah.
Well, how simple would it be today for the people who are listening to our audience? I mean, this, you know, people talk about business and I'm totally confused how simple this is as it relates to business. God's all about business. And you're his business, and he's interested in how you are going to succeed. He gave you all your talents. He gave you all your gifts. He knows exactly what you'd like to do. He's out 2 steps ahead of you, but he's going to walk with it. He's going to walk through your trouble with you. He's going to go through your situations with you, but we don't talk to him. We treat him like an appellate court judge. We just kind of come and talk to him, and we say this, and then we walk away without hearing what we wanted to do. We were just telling him our side of the story. And so it's awkward.
So Bob, let me ask this question. So you got two, I'm a person, I just picked up your book. I don't know you from Adam. And I'm reading this thing, 2 chairs. And I'm thinking, is he really literally saying to me, have 2 chairs in my office? I sit in one and there's this invisible being in the other one that I'm talking to. And then I ask him a question. And then how do I know what he's saying to me? How can I hear that on my heart? What do you say to that?
So the answer is every single day you hear, just so we go backwards a second, is every single day, you're just sitting in your office and you're doing something. And then you hear all this negative stuff that, hey, you're never going to get that job done. You're never going to get ahead. Did you hear this? All this is said, you're a loser. You're going downhill. And this is on. Do you know that person doesn't like you over here? Who said that? How do you always have this self-talk mechanism that's constantly pressing us and doing all this stuff? And we're just not having a chance to do it. And my point is, so the guy who created the whole world has aspects when you're looking to expect something, right? So it's all done based on faith. Faith is what God says. It's impossible not to please him. If you don't have faith, faith calls things that are not as though they were. So God said, hey, sit in a chair and talk to me. And so have you ever had where you talk to God, but you feel this impression that you should go a specific direction and he's leading you? Well, some people, I had a woman, she calls me, she's 88 years old. And she says, oh my gosh, is this Bob Bodine's call center? And I go, no, I don't have a call center. This is Bob Bodine. And so she goes, and so I said, hey, so what's your name? Sarah. She says, I'm 88, Bob. She said, I just read 2 chairs. Oh my gosh, it's the greatest book I've ever read. And so I said, fantastic. And so as we sit and talk, and I said, wow. And she goes, I said, so Sarah, what can I do for you today? She says, I'm not hearing God at 2 chairs. Really? And I said, so, how long have you been doing 2 chairs? Oh, I started today. I said, you started today? How would you get my telephone number? And so I said, so do you know first before we say anything that the enemy does not want you to actually think you hear anything? So they're going to create such calamity, because if you could hear God and sit just like you were Moses sitting across from a chair and you believe that you're hearing God, right? Not just by reading the word, in front of you. Now, I love you. I want you to read the word, but I'm not going to read the power of who while I'm talking to Bob Bodine. I'm going to sit and talk to Bob Bodine about the power of who. I'm not going to read a devotional and vicariously live through someone else having a good two-chair conversation. I might read one of the devotionals just to see if he's getting better conversation than I am from God. So she turns to me and she said, "Well, I so loved it. I couldn't believe it." And I immediately started calling around to TV stations. Really? And what happened? I called them and I told them that I'm not hearing God and that this is my first day. And she says, "Oh my gosh, you got to be kidding me." And she goes, and so she says, "Bob Bodine would really love to give." And she gave him my cell number. So I'm talking to her and I said, "So Sarah, when did you think you heard me? Okay, that you should call Bob Bodine?" "While I was doing two chairs." And I go, "Really?" I said, "Sarah, I'm Bob Bodine. How did you hear that my name? And how would you get somebody on a phone that no one has ever gotten me on the phone through a cell? And no one's going to give out my number based on something." And I said, "You're 88. That's the most amazing thing I've ever heard." And so I said, "What's really the problem?" And then she told me the real problem, right? That all of a sudden she was telling me a problem that she really wanted to talk about. She had no one to talk to. And I just turned to her and I said, "Ah." And I said, "So we had a chance to talk about it, solve a problem, get her through the issue and do something. God has specifically talked to people all throughout history. Everybody hears God talks. And so when I sit with him and I talk, he impresses some things. I just take notes. All of a sudden I'm saying, hey, so I turn to him and I say, hey, so here's all my cares. Here's everything that bugs me. I'm putting it on your chair. I can't deal with it. I don't know what to do. I have no control. I can't do this. What would you like to do today?" And I said, "What's on your heart?" I hear God immediately say, "Hey, so I got four things I'd really like you to do today." I just heard him just like you just said it to me. And I go, "Really?" He says, "Are you available?" And I go, "Sure." And he goes, "It'll be inconvenient." And I said, "So when's the first person coming?" "You'll know." And I said, "But then how do you know?" "So like at 10 o'clock, all of a sudden someone comes in and starts to talk to me about a problem." And I'm going, "So God, is this the one?" "Have him sit down." And now I sit time, and now I solve this problem, which opens up an opportunity for me over here, which opens up something over here. I solve the next person at two, I something here, and it's happened my whole life. So when I first started writing, God said to me, "So what do you want out of this book?" I said, "I don't know what your book, what would you want?" And he goes, "I'm going to put a thought in your mind." And so I said, "What?" And he goes, "Bam, I hear it." I said, captive audience. And he goes, "Exactly." He says, "What do you think that is?" I said, "Prisons, people in prison, military, you know, people who are in, you know, first responders, social services." And he says, "That's where you're like, what do you think about that?" I said, "Those people would love to have two chairs, right? We need them to think that God would be with them because they're in such danger. There's so much problems in prisons. There's so much problems, you know, in military with anything." And so about 6 months into my thing, I got a call from a foundation in Oregon. And they said, "Oh my gosh, we just love this book. We love your mom and who, you know, was telling the three questions. And then I tell seven things to do in a time of crisis." And so she says, "So we love this book. We'd like to get this book and we send it to a specific group of people." And I said, "Who?" "Prisons, military, first responders, and social services." So do you think I heard that correctly? And now they're calling me? So here's the thing. I don't care. I mean, when I told them, I said, "How many books are you going to do?" They said, they're not going to do just normal 5,000 books. They came out and said, "We're going to make 265,000 copies of Two Chairs. And we're going to send it out to prisons and everywhere." I get letters and notes from people all over the world telling me of their first conversation with God. I have people who have been Christians for all their life and they never thought they even could talk to God. I mean, no one told them that, I'm allowed to talk to him. I mean, is God going to actually talk? And could I really understand him? What if I'm just saying it to myself? And the answer is, what did he say? And then you'll test it. You'll test it with the word. You'll test it with all of a sudden and see if all of a sudden the thing that God said to you is actually doing it. I said, so when you actually think, "Oh my gosh, I want to go to college. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to think about this." And you're sitting talking to God. You think you can find that in Ecclesiastes 6:8? No. So how is it that you think if in your day, "Oh my gosh, I haven't called Rob"? Who told you that? And I call Rob, and then I find out Rob's either in trouble or Rob's all of a sudden going to open up a door for me. That's all of a sudden going to say, hey, you and I are going to do a podcast, and we're going to change people, and we're going to open up the fact that they're going to have conversations themselves. You could stop. People who are listening today can stop for the first time because you're in trouble. And so I get people asking me, and I said, well, listen, when you're on a gurney heading to the hospital, you're not thinking about your prescription plan and your rehab program. You know what you're doing? God, please help me. Really? So now you're totally comfortable with asking for help in times of trouble. But in your normal process of who you are, I can't ask for God. And the answer is, I start this out with my kids early. And my daughters used to come down and say, I can't find my socks. I can't find it. And I said, you want to pray about it? And so she goes, No, I don't want to do that. I want to find my socks. And then they run around, they can't find the socks. And then they finally stop, come back and go, okay, let's pray. I said, God, I need you to tell Allison where the socks are. And then all of a sudden, in 60 seconds, she comes back and goes, God told me where the sock was. Really? How did you hear that? How would you know that? Because God says, you know my voice. So he's been talking all your life. He's been doing things, if you look back, that he wanted to tell you. But listen, we're in very tough times right now. Economy, jobs, situations, people are hurt. There's so many things that go wrong. And who are you going to turn to, friends or strangers? Who are you going to talk to? Are you going to just sit and say, I can do this my own? Because God will let you do that if you want to. But he's there. He said, just ask me. Come in and talk to me. He said, he goes in the Bible and he talks about the fact that he says that he's so bothered in Psalms that if you'd only have listened to my rebuke, I would have shared with you all my thoughts and all my counsel. And so my thought would be is, wouldn't we do that? And so as I've been doing two chairs for 42 years. And I can tell you that every single day I do two chairs, I wouldn't miss a day that I could talk to God because he's constantly got something for me. In the stories that I tell you in this book, I'm going to show you people that had to actually trust God, listen to him. They're going to run out of the day. They're not going to talk to God. And then God's going to give them one thought. And as they get into their job, all of a sudden they find it. That's one of my favorite stories, you know, of this guy. He turns to me, he goes, I loved it the first time I did it. I'd love the second, but now I'm really busy. I'm going to give my big project, my big proposal for my big piece of business. And I'm going in. As I start to walk, I'm running out my day to get my bag. And then I look back at the chair and he says, I could just hear God say, seriously, you're not going to come talk to me. You got a big thing today. We need to talk. He breathes, stops, puts his bag down, goes sit down. And so he says, okay, I got this big project today. And he goes, I know. And he goes, well, what am I going to do? He says, well, a couple of people that you're talking to aren't really for you like you thought. It would be good that you stop first in and talk to the president who got you the job, but you've never really spent time with him again. Go in and tell him about your project. And he says, watch what he says, and then everything will change. And he says, okay, you can go. Let's go. You got to get to work. Now that took 60 seconds.
Yeah.
He blows to the office. He stops in, knocks on the president's door. Hey, Bill, what are you doing? He says, hey, great to see you. You haven't been in to see me. How are you doing? And he goes, well, I'm really doing good. I got this big project. Yeah, I know about you. You got a big proposal you're doing today. He said, I'm going to show this. He says, can I run it by you first? Because I love your thoughts. Sure, I'd love to see it. And he looks and he shows him the different things. He goes, you know, the two things over here, don't go with that. What this idea, that's really big. He says, I really like that. That could go place and take our company to new ways. Well, the two other ones were the guys who he had come in and all of a sudden had given him an idea that they were wanting him to take in comparison to him. He goes into his meeting. He starts his meeting. He starts to talk about it. Now, the two guys know that he's not talking about their deal. He says, this is the one area. The president walks in and sits down in the back. All of a sudden, now everybody sees the president and he starts to talk about this one project that they were talking about. He's really expanded the ideas because he had the whole afternoon now just to work on the one rather than three. He busts it. He gets it done. The president in the back goes, now, wow, I really like that idea. And the senior vice president in the front goes, okay. And then the president says, hey, I got to go. He steps out of the office and they go with his project as the number one project for the Coke company. He comes back, calls me and goes, Would I have not stopped into God? Does God actually talk to me as simple as that and give me the ideas exactly what that is? Now, I'm a CEO of an executive search firm. I place the commissioner of baseball, the head of marketing, I place 54 of the 100 athletic directors in the game. I couldn't do any of my jobs without God's help. How do you find the right person for the right job? How do you do it? Through insight and wisdom. That's what happens. You change and drop all that you're doing on his chair. Then God says, okay, listen, be quiet for a second. I'm going to drop insight and wisdom and peace and joy and power and favor on you for the day. I'm going to tell you the battle you got. I need you to do these things because your steps are ordered. He's the author and the finisher. So he's not going to like be involved with you. Of course he is. And yet we hamstring us and shoot ourselves in the foot by trying to do it on our own. See how that works for you? It ain't working. And so everybody who's listening today, who has not stopped and said, I'm going to set up a chair. How would you know he's not going to talk to you? The guy who created the whole world, he talks to everybody else. So you're saying he's not going to talk to you? Of course he's going to talk to you. He's not mad at you. He's not mad he made you. He made no mistakes. You're a one of a kind. If you only knew how powerful you are, if you only knew that if you sat at two chairs, you would know that you're the daughter and the son of the king, that you're going to do great and mighty things, and that he wanted to get you and anoint you before you walked out your day. So don't like do this at 2 o'clock and then all of a sudden miss the whole day. What if you had something he needed to do at 9 o'clock? Your success and all the things that you're doing, you're hearing God say, oh my gosh, there's something wrong with my daughter. You need to call her today. Oh my gosh, while you're sitting there and you sit there and goes, listen, you know, I've sat in there one time. I said, I'm so mad at my wife because I do this. She did this, this, this. And I'm sitting there and he turns, he goes, is Cheryl here? And I go, no. And he goes, well, we'll work on you.
Hey, Bob, so I got to ask this question. I mean, you have an amazing faith. You have this amazing energy and this confidence about your faith. Did you always have that, or how did you develop that over time? Because I don't think I have a tough time believing somebody out of the blue is going to pick up two chairs. All of a sudden, they're going to have the faith that I see in you right now on the screen.
So what's so fantastic with God is that everything starts, right? So my favorite neighbor for mine was Zig Ziglar, and he said, you don't have to be great to start, but you got to start to be great. So faith is a mustard seed. It starts as the littlest of seed, but you plant it and you say, I'm trusting God on this little thing. And then you watch, he takes care of it. Now I have trust for a little bigger thing. And then I trust that. And now I get trust thing, and he gives you a bigger and more trust. And so I hear God and I say, hey, did you really talk to me? Did you really like say that to me? So I had a friend of mine, Tom Ziegler. And so his son says to me, he had never done two chairs. And so he says, I did a podcast with this guy and I'm listening to the podcast between you and Tom Ziegler, like, okay. And so he goes, hey, so what's your favorite book, Tom? And Tom goes, I love this book, Two Chairs. Really? What the heck's two chairs? He goes, my friend Bob Bodine wrote it. It's one chair for you, one for God. You meet him first thing in the morning and you talk. There's a conversation. Really? He says, are you talking about chairs, real chairs? He goes, yeah, no chairs. And he says, you're saying that the guy who created the whole world's in your chair across from you? Yeah, he can pretty much be anywhere he wants, right? I mean, and so, and he goes, okay. So like, you're going to have to tell me what this is about. So he said, so I sit down. He says, he tells me that the night before I'm going to pray about the fact that the chairs, I'm going to meet you. And what he says to me is make sure when you get up that you go in, get your cup of coffee, sit down, go into the room, sit down, and you'll all of a sudden sense his presence. So hold a second. So in the presence of God is fullness of joy. If you've got nothing else out of this and you're filled with joy, what do you got? Strength for your day. The joy of the Lord is your strength. So there's a presence. There's a change in the atmosphere when you walk in a room where God is. And if we could take the Ark of the Covenant that God does, and he says that, is that if we all are Christian, some of the people are listening, some people don't, I don't care. It doesn't matter, because once you have two chairs and you talk to God, how are you gonna deny the fact that he just talked to you and all of a sudden he just did what he said, because he's going to blow you out of the box when you all of a sudden do this. So Tom's sitting there and he says, so I got my coffee. I sat down. I could feel him. And I said, good morning. And I said, and so the guy goes, what'd he say? Well, I didn't hear anything right back at the start. And then so I said, and so he said, what did you say? I said, Bob told me to come.
And so, that's great.
And so he goes, and he says, so listen, I've been a Christian my whole life. And you can't talk to Bob and not talk to me. So if you're real, and I know you are, you have to reveal to me. And so he says, so what do you have to say? Now he hears this directly into his thing, not audibly, directly in his ear, just the same way you hear the enemy say, you are just never going to do this, or you're so in trouble, or this thing, you better worry about this, be anxious. He hears this directly in his ear. So Tom, you're in my seat. Tom jumps up and goes and sits in the other seat. True story. And he goes and sits in the other seat. And he looks, and just like someone saying, oh, come on. And he looks and he goes. And so Tom goes, was that you? Or did you really say that to me? Or did I just say that to myself? And so God says, so is that real enough for you, Tom? And from that day, if I showed you on a chart of Tom Ziegler and his company, and his dad had died, his mom had died, and he's feeling low, and he's got to run the whole company. When he started doing two chairs, his whole line went straight up, went from here all the way up, and his business escalated. Why? Because you're talking to the guy who created the whole world, who created his dad, who created his mom, who could talk to him, could share problems, and could listen and say, yeah, don't worry about that. That's not something I want you to think about. These are the things I want you to think about. So God says, be anxious for nothing. It's Philippians 4, 6 through 8. In all your ways, just acknowledge me. Listen to me. I want you to acknowledge this, that if you will just focus and be anxious, then the peace of God that surpasses understanding is going to rest on you. And then he says, and then I want you to think on these things that are pure and lovely and a good report, that are excellent and praiseworthy. Because if I can change your mind from the trouble you're in, because everyone today is that I interview as a CEO, I can tell who's going to win in 5 minutes based on the energy and the love and what they're doing when they come into a meeting, that they already know who they are and whose they are. How could you know who you are if you're not sitting with the king? He's going to tell you, you're the son of the king, you're the daughter of the king, that you're a joint heir, that you're mine, and that I have plans for you, and they're good and prosperous future and hope. Now, how do you know? How do I know without question? Because I've, for 42 years and all this time, everybody I've ever shared this with, they all come back with these unbelievable bigger stories than I've got. And they're telling me that all of a sudden they've done this. I have people in prison that are saying that, like, they sat down and Jesus, like, sat down next to them. Does he do that with you? No. And I've had people who tell me that they've had these unbelievable conversations and they were here and now they're here. So how do you know until you try something, right? And so you have nothing to lose, everything to gain.
Absolutely. That's great stuff, Bob. So how did you, you're running a company, you're in the company of your dad, you're running a company, you write the first book, you write the second book. Did you ever see yourself as being this big speaker that you are now? Or would that was never on the agenda?
No idea. And so, but I always would talk. So somebody asked me one time and said, how did you get to be like a speaker? Because I tell stories. I'm going to tell a story here in a second to you. And in this process, how did you get to this spot? And I said, I did like 2,641s with Robs of the world. Where you sit down and you come to me and you go, so I'm in deep trouble. My mom just died. My daughter died. My situation happened. I lost my job. Not because I did anything. It's just my job just went away. And so what can I do? And I would turn to you and I go, well, listen, God's got a great plan. I mean, if you've lost your job, congratulations. God's got something else. I mean, that's what most people miss. Wouldn't it be good for you to try to figure out what you want, what's written on your heart, what you desire? And that, so, you know, I always tell people there's five things that you should consider when you look at a new job. And so if you think about it in speaking, is that if I could tell, you know, people don't, who cares about a job description? It's what the greatest people are looking for. Here's what you're looking for. You should go where you're celebrated, not where you're tolerated. So I'm not going to just join a company if I didn't know their atmosphere and their corporate culture, and they're going to celebrate me, that they're not recruiting me, that there's not people who immediately smile at me as they come into it. Why would you want to join a company otherwise? Go where you're celebrated. Two, they got good tools. They got benefits, and they got planning, and they got benefits, and they've got training, and they let you do your job. They empower you to do the job. Three, it's really good for your family. Like, don't take a job. Don't tell me that you win at someone else's expense. I never win at someone else's expense. God doesn't need me to do that. I'm not going to all of a sudden take a job and my wife's going to have to like painfully leave her mom and dad, and we just had twins. I mean, no, you're not. God can do better than that. I'm going to bring that to God. I bet he has a better job than me thinking that. And so I got tons of people who have done that all over the world. And so I kind of stop and I've reconfigured in this process is that family would be number one, but I'm not telling my wife, and you're not telling your wife unless you had number one and number two beforehand, right? That I'm celebrated and I got two tools. Four is that I can do a legacy here, that we could actually create and do something significant that's moment-making, that's difference-making in people's lives. And I could treat all the people in my firm better. And I could, everybody could be lifted up, and I could take care of all their finance, you know, their medical needs. We could have insurance, we could have all this stuff. And last is I could be paid really well. So listen, it's the same mirror image that the company wants. They want to be celebrated. They want you to bring tools they haven't got. They want you to join their family of their company. They want you to create a legacy for them. They want you to make a lot of money for them, right? And if you'll do those two things, we're kicking. And so when I started in this process is that I found not only is it that my whole thing in life is I like to encourage people and show them how could it be more encouraging that if I told you that the guy who created the whole world knows your name, knows everything about you, has a plan for you, and he'd like to talk to you about it. And then once he does, he's given you all the people you need. So I got chair number two. And when you go into a crisis, there's seven things that I'm going to tell you in your crisis. I had no idea, Rob, that when I wrote two chairs, that I was really writing this for me during my crisis. Yeah. So when we got the call in June that from my granddaughter, that my grandson had drowned at 13 months, now all your faith is going to have to come into action here. Now how you respond is going to be tested. And it's not like you don't have, God promises. My life quote is John 16:33, and that in this world, you're going to have trouble. Be of good cheer. Who in their right mind would want that as your quote? And because you'd have to know something to get to the cheer. That God, that in times of trouble, God, that trouble is different than you think. So it can't be any more horrendous that all of a sudden now we're in all of a sudden 7 days in the ICU and we're in now with a fight for our life. And day one, we're in total chaos. And so what do? My daughter doesn't know what to do. All of a sudden, my wife's praying with another woman on an ICU floor, and her daughter's going to look for sure die, and she's in deep trouble. And now this woman's like an angel comes in and says to my daughter, let me pray for your daughter. And now we have a team. She's coming in, and she like electrifies my daughter back to life because she turns and says, your grandson is in a coma. Your son is in a coma. And he can hear every word, and he wants us to know where you are, and you better be in the room. And so Jenny just ran to go to the room, and everything shifted. She just changed. And so on day two, we found we had no control about anything in life. And that's what people don't know is, listen, when you don't know what to do or where to turn, there's no neutral ground in a crisis. You're either going to go to faith or you're going to go to fear. You are in trouble. But when things are terrible, when it doesn't look good, God's not done. So we all locked arms together and we prayed. And the God that surpasses understanding in Philippians actually stepped into the room with us. I don't know how to express in 45 years of being a Christian. I never had ever experienced anything like this in my entire life. And so I had to learn another whole thing of what surpassing peace was. So because I had all my kids and all my family and my daughter and my son-in-law, and I had to be able to stop and give hope in the midst of this crisis. And then God seemed to, like an orchestra leader, teach us exactly what roles we were going to do for the next 7 days. And so God is so faithful and so unbelievable in times like trouble. And so I was always expecting that my grandson was going to just sit up, right? Just going to sit up. And so on day eight, my grandson gives his heart to a four-month-old who's never been home from the hospital and now is home with his family. Can you imagine how great it is for that family, for their grandparents and their brothers and their sisters and everyone to have this kid? Now he's 10 months old. And he gave his liver to a 2-year-old boy who was on our floor. And that boy, you know, he totally changed his life, and he's home now. And now he gave his two kidneys to a 42-year-old woman who had like no time to live. And she's, can a 2-year-old little peanuts of a kidneys, which grow into the largest thing, can that actually work in a woman's life? God is amazing. He's a ninja. And so I don't know how to express it. So as day eight, we're turning down the corridor and we're coming down the line, and I'm thinking, God, are you going to like sit him up? And so he turns to make the turn. We all say our goodbyes. It's one of the most emotional moments in the world. You can't express it. And he turns the corner and he says, he's sitting up with me, Bob. I got him.
Jeez.
I had to paint like pictures from my daughter and my son-in-law. My son-in-law is like, I tell him, and it, you know, the pain and the shame and the fear of all the stuff that goes on in something like this. My daughter, I told her, I said, so can you imagine Jesus walking Bo? His name was Bo. He named after our last name, B-E-A-U. I wanted his middle name to be Dean, so it'd be Bo Dean Burns. My son-in-law, he nicks that idea. And he's a big guy. He's fantastic. And he wanted it to be after his uncle, and his name was Brocious. I said, Bo Bro. And I said, come on. And so he turned and he said, and so on day one, my daughter on the ICU, she gets a picture, a vision of God in her dream of a bow playing in a stream in heaven. And on day seven, my daughter looks to my wife and says, I wonder what Bo Brocious Burns means. And it means beautiful, eternal stream. Can God be in the detail of such in this? I mean, so we had so many miracles along the way. And so one of the things that I encourage people is that if it's not good, your situation right now, you're in it. Because I had to give a talk like 3 weeks later at a Buffini event. And I told them, I said, there's 1,500 of you here that have had something terrible. You're in it with us, but you just didn't tell anybody. And mine is that I tell you because that God walked us through this with him. And he's helped my daughter. So my daughter, as we were doing, I'm painting this picture for my daughter. I said, can you imagine Jesus walking Bo into heaven? And there's my mom who passed away back in 2005. And she's got 25 great grandchildren. This is the first one she's ever seen.
Jeez.
And so I said, do you think Jesus ever gets to hold him again? I said, there's no way. And
so, she's not letting him go, right? She's not letting him go.
And I said, a day in heaven, Jenny, is 1,000 years. So when I die, Jenny, he'll have missed me 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So there's pictures. I tend to my son-in-law, I said, listen, you're my hero. And he goes, what are you talking about? I said, as a sophomore in high school, you were a lifeguard. And then you pull Bo out, you resuscitate him so that three other people live now. I said, can you imagine that God gave you Bo? Would you take back the 13 months and not have him? No. You want those 13 months. And Bo's a hero. I mean, that's why they do an honor walk. And so for people who have lost friends or had miscarriages or their mom just died or their dad. So here's what I want to encourage you. Is that the greatest thing about two chairs is that God's going to talk to you about it. He's going to tell you, hey, your mom's okay. She's sitting right next to me. You're going to see her. She's in her greatest health. Do you think your mom wants you for 1 second to be sad? No, Bo doesn't want that. He wants you to be sad. He's so proud of you. The fact is that our whole family, my daughter, oh my gosh. I'll tell you one little story is that my daughter on day six, they tell you your child is brain dead, grandson. And then on day seven, they have to do it again, you know, before they go into organs. And on day seven, we had this fantastic doctor. And because of all the pain that they go in, and these doctors on ICU floors, they don't like to cry, right? They can't get too emotionally involved. They're guarding their heart. The pandemic made it even worse. And they're guarded. And so she turned and said, you know, Jenny and Rob, I don't want to tell you my results of this seventh day. And Jenny just stood up. It's the most proud moment I've seen in my daughter. She said, oh my gosh. She turned to the doctor. She goes, you were such a good doctor. You took care and so loved Bo. We want to tell you from our family how much we love you. And this woman, she broke. Every nurse in the place broke. And we all hugged and we all came together. And there's some releases that, you know, some people who are listening today have never, ever cried still. They haven't let go. And I'm telling you, your son, your daughter, your husband, your mom. I mean, moms are impossible to lose. I have so many people call me and I tell them, I said, I'm so sorry that your mom died. I said, but what a great day in heaven it is. They've broken out into the cheers.
Yeah.
The people are waiting to see your mom. There's orchestras and there's sights and there's smells and they're totally at your perfect health. And you can see them running your mom who had this cancer or that. They had none of that. All of a sudden she's 32 and she's just looking pretty good. All of a sudden, all the people she's ever helped are there waiting to meet her, to tell her how fantastic and what she did in their life. And she doesn't even know she did. And she meets the disciples and she meets this. And then she meets God and Jesus and all of them. And they say, we're so proud of you. Well done. We're so happy you're here. And we have all that to look forward to. I mean, so if people who don't have that today and you're sitting in a finite world, right? My question is that how would you know unless you sat at two chairs? Say good morning. Bob told me to come.
Bob, that was beautiful. That was beautiful. And thank you for sharing that. I was getting a little emotional as you were telling the story. And it's like, where do you go from there? And it's just a beautiful story how, you know, if we believe, and it's about believing, that's all you need, right? Believe that and know and have that faith. And you know, you're going to get through any tough time because he's sitting there. And Bob, I'm sitting right across from I'm sitting in the chair that I look at from the chair that I sit in right now as I'm talking to you. And I remember reading your book and I said, you know, I've prayed for a long time and I've sat in his chair for a long time, but I'm like, all right, I'm just going to ask God a question. I'm going to tell him what's on my heart and I'm going to shut up. I'm just going to shut up and listen. And in my world, I call it contemplative prayer. You know, I just get my mind quiet and just, and I don't always hear it because the distractions go in my head, but I'm working on it. And you're proof positive that it works. And the Tom Ziegler story was awesome. Thank you for sharing that. But Bob, before we go here, and thank you for so much of your time today. Like I'm sitting here thinking, I can't wait to share this with everybody. You gave me a gift today.
Yeah.
You gave me a gift and I can't tell you how grateful I am for it. And it's good to be able to share this with other people, but I got to ask you, how much more chiseling is going to be going on in your life?
Yeah.
You've done a lot. You've done a lot. You've accomplished a lot. How much gas has Bob got in the tank?
So I feel like I just started. It's like, so you get to one of the things that God trusts you in times of trouble so that you can help a lot of other people who are in trouble. And there's so many people who are still so hurt. And you only got a choice of you're either. So I didn't know. I mean, listen, there's a guy who wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl, and every one of his family died in a death camp, in a Nazi death camp. And he said this at the end because he wasn't going to let anybody just beat his spirit down. You know, you can hurt my mind. You can do a lot of things. You can't beat my spirit. You can't meet my soul. And so he said this, that between any situation, any stimulus, and every response is the power to choose your response. And so that's what we have a chance today to do, is that I'm going to sit at this stage in my life. And now my executive search business, I'm planning to go forward with. And my speaking, I'm doing speeches all over the country. I've got 1,000 people who in Brisbane, Australia, who have just read Two Chairs and are now trying to take it across the world. I have a woman, fantastic, Angie Bird, who's just created, I can't wait to show on, and people who are on LinkedIn or Facebook or Instagram with me. I do inspiration every single day. And then I'm going to show this. She made a painting of Two Chairs. And then I told her she should then sell these as prints so that people can afford them. And they put in their house of Two Chairs because it's a portal. It's a chance for you to step into a portal and be with the King. And we just don't know it. I don't care if you hadn't experienced yet. Wait and see. It's just, how do I describe the indescribable? And so I'm planning to write 3 more books.
I was going to say, you got 3 books left, so I know you got that going on.
I do. I've rethought exactly how grief books should be rewritten in a way that all of a sudden is going to create such a different viewpoint. Because listen, if you've lost somebody, we need you. Your family needs you. Your friends need you. You can't just go sideways. Don't let the enemy beat you. And then I've got to write. I'm writing a book called 5 Minutes or Less, that everything good and bad happens in 5 minutes or less. So can you imagine what the amazing aspect is, that time's our enemy, but timing's our best friend. And so now we can help change people in 5 minutes. I can promise you this, that as you go to two chairs, 5 minutes, God can change this. And when I show you the stories of how the power of who can change 5 minutes of your career, you're finding the right doctor, you're getting into the right dentist, you're getting the right lawyer, you're getting to the right situation to help your kid get into school. We have that all over the country, but we don't know how to access the power of who because we haven't read it. And 67% of people over the age of 23 are never going to read another book. So I'm telling you, readers are leaders. So you got to read, read, read. I used to think people wrote books to like schmooze me into reading their book so that all of a sudden they could be rich. Then I read their books and then I found out they were already rich and they wanted to give me their secrets and it cost me nothing to get. And I thought, oh. And so my thing is that I'm so encouraged about where things are going and what's going to go next for your people. And so, you know, once you start a relationship, you know, don't have to be great to start, but you have to start to be great. Once you start, one thing leads to another. And I'm telling you, God has plans for each of us. You are amazing, awesome, phenomenal, beyond anything imaginable. You're a one of a kind. There's no one like you. No one's ever been created like you. You do one thing better than anybody in the whole world. And God wants to tell you what that is so that you get onto your path. And when you do,
watch out.
We're out of here.
Bob, I got to, if you, can I get time for one more story? Oh, yeah. My end?
Absolutely, please.
So I'll tell you the story and then we'll break up here. So you talked about readers and leaders and you got to read, read, read. And nobody, and most people stop reading or not going to read another book after age 20, 23, whatever it was. So I'm sitting in this chair that I'm sitting talking to you right now. I got 1,000 books on my shelves right here that I've read over the last 30 years. And my daughter comes in one time. She was 13 years old. She walks in my room. She goes, Dad, she goes, can you pick me out a book to read? I'm like, sure. What's this all about? She goes, well, Dad, I see that you do very well. You're successful. And I know you read a lot of books and I just want to read a book. So I picked out a John Gordon book. I hadn't picked up your books yet. I didn't know you yet.
love John Gordon.
So I pick up a John Gordon book and I give it to her. And she starts walking out the door. She goes, oh, Dad, by the way, she goes, can you give me a journal too? And I'm like, a journal? I'm like, what are you going to do with the journal? And she goes, I'm going to write down everything I did, what I thought, and the places I go and all the people I help. And I'm like, wow, Bob, she's 13 having this conversation, right? So then wake up the next morning. Oh, so I said, well, here, I had a spare journal sitting on my desk. I said, here's what she goes. No, I want one like the first one you ever brought home from Maui. And that was a Brian Buffini event, the first peak. He gave us this nice Italian leather bound journal. So she goes, I want one just like that. So anyway, she goes to bed, wake up the next morning. And I said, you read? And she goes, I read 7 chapters. And I said, what'd you get out of it? She goes, I got out of all that. I'm going to help a bunch of people. I'm going to lead a bunch of people. And I'm going to tell everybody, you know, how God helps me in my life. And I'm like, this is like, I'm scratching my head, Bob. She's 13 years old. So fast forward 4 months later, she's read six other John Gordon books. She's written 7 books now. She's playing a soccer game. And they're in a tournament. They win the first game, fine. They have to win the second game to get to the championship. They can't, you know, in soccer, if it ends in a tie, they got to go into penalty kicks. So no ties. The game ends in a tie, go into penalty kicks. My daughter's the 4th shooter out of 5. So it gets to her. They're up 2-1, and we're like the home team. So if she scores, we win, and game's over. So, Bob, she very calmly, very cool, collected. She sits the ball at a 12-yard line. She steps back. She shoots. She scores, right? We win. Of course, Dad's proud of his daughter. She, you know, she scored the winning goal and all that, right? I wanted to know what was going on in her mind. So we go down on the field. We're walking across the field. I put my arm around her. And I said, so Amanda, I said, were you nervous? Were you ready to take that shot? She goes, no, not at all. I said, really? I said, what were you thinking? She said, Dad, I was thinking about all the books you asked me to read. Is that something else?
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And you know, God led her down that road. Not me, God.
Of course. And she heard it, but she also... People are saying is that, listen, your life matters because what you're doing is you don't know how much impact you're having on the people around you. And the answer is, what greater gift can God give? That's the greatest gift God can give you, that your daughter actually comes up and says what an impact this has and you have been. And I want to be like my dad. I want to get somewhere. And if I have to get somewhere, what does he think? Well, he puts a lot of things that he doesn't try to do it just himself. He's trying to learn. I mean, that's why I love Brian Buffini. I mean, he just brings people together. He's such a motivator and such an unbelievable person. His whole life of how he did what he got to and how he got to where he is. He's just one of the kindest. And I just love his whole family. I mean, I love everything about their family. And we just got friends because of Tom Ziegler.
Yeah.
And so again, how do you get to where you go? Because God's orchestrating your who. And he's going to take you from this who to the next who. And then you're going to be disappointed in life. And then a who's going to pick you up and then going to take you over. And then who's the greatest who of who's? God at two chairs. I mean, could you imagine that you're trying to find your dream and you got it in a chair and then you got a book that actually introduces you to who? And I tell people all the time and they say, so what is God going to say to me at two chairs? I didn't ride three chairs. I don't get to go. He's got to talk to you. So you're going to be the story next, right? Wow. Everyone hears God and they hear him clear. And so I tell people, talk out loud when you're talking to God at two chairs. Don't like talk, you know, like telepathic. No. Yeah. Out loud. And watch how he talks back to you in your mind. You'll hear it.
Bob, that was beautiful, man. Thank you. Thank you so much. We've been doing this for a while. I can't express to you how grateful I am that you gave me all this time today. Gave everybody all this time because we're going to share it and people are going to be inspired. They're going to be moved and they're going to start talking. They're going to start setting up their two chairs, right? Yeah. So, Bob, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, how do they find you? Instagram, LinkedIn, how do they find you?
They're going to find in all of those. And then once they friend me and they say, hey, I just listened to you on Rob's show and da, 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 this is what it meant and da, da, da. Then all of a sudden I comment back to them, right? People always think they can't imagine that I do it, right? That I even talk. And so, you know, along the way, I mean, you know, you message somebody, you do something. If you want to find me and something about my thing, go to bobbodine.com. And it's got both my two chairs and everything about my firm and any of the other stuff. And, you know, the one thing you want the most is the presence of God in your life. This is the most thing you want. And there's nothing in my life that I want more than that. And then I want some facet of his anointing to be able to talk. And so I hope that which you prayed before we started actually occurred today and that people's hearts were moved. And there's nothing you can't get through. Yeah. Nothing with God.
And by the way, he was in the third chair today.
he was there. I felt it.
Bob, thanks again. Thanks so much. And until next time, everybody, let's go get chiseled.
You just got chiseled with Rob Pomodoro. Be sure to like this podcast, share it with your friends, and subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. Also, you can find Rob's book on Amazon, Better Than Equal.